All right, guys. Just want to welcome everybody to the line tonight. Once again, this is Ryan McGinn with MuscleGainingExperts.com, and tonight we have a killer call. It's with Jim Smitty Smith, one of the co-founding members of the Diesel Crew. Jim is certified through the National Strength and Conditioning Association as a certified strength and conditioning specialist, also the International Sports Science Association as a certified fitness trainer, and the United States Weightlifting Club as a certified Olympic weightlifting coach. Jim is an expert trainer, writes for magazines like Men's Fitness, and he's also a member of the Elite Q&A staff, and he's been involved in the strength and conditioning and training as performance enhancement specialist for a little over 8 years. I could keep going, Jim, but you have a lot of letters next to your name, so once again, thanks a lot for being on the call, man.
No problem.
But, all right, guys, we'll jump right into the call here. Smitty, go ahead and give us a little background, you know, on your stuff. How'd you get started? You know, how did Diesel Crew become what it is today? Kind of a little overview of Smitty.
Sure. Well, thanks for the intro. I can say right off the bat that all those letters behind my name don't really mean anything. I really cherish, you know, pretty much the 20 years of training I've done over, you know, all those letters. You know, a lot of the strength coaches that come out of college and, you know, after they become certified, you know, a lot of them go to like a weekend certification, you know, even the NSCA, you know, they require a bachelor degree and, you know, there's a certification where you go away for a test and, you know, there's a lot of study materials and different things. But once you become certified, that doesn't mean you know how to train athletes or you know, individuals looking to achieve their goals. You know, I think that what's more important is actually training, you know, and actually getting under the bar yourself. You know, it's one thing to, you know, train yourself, but, you know, you can't really ask others to do things unless, you know, you yourself have experienced it, you yourself have worked on the technique and, you know, really gotten under the bar. So I appreciate all the accolades, you know, with the letters behind my name, but what's really important is just getting under the bar. So that being said, you know, I've been training for over 20 years. And Ryan mentioned that, you know, I've been training athletes for 8 years. I got certified by the NSCA in 2001, but I've really been training athletes, you know, right around 1999, 2000. So, you know, it's been a while, and I've been in the game a lot for over, you know, many years. But, you know, I write for Men's Fitness, all that stuff, but, you know, what's really important, again, is just, you know, making others achieve their goals. And that's something that, you know, I really cherish and, you know, I appreciate you letting me on the call tonight and helping others achieve their goals.
I appreciate you being on the call. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm reaching out to people and getting them on the call and interviewing as many people as I can. So got to go where the best is to learn, you know.
Well, thanks, Ryan. I appreciate that.
No problem. Well, when did your lifting actually start? Like, what got you, you know, into the industry? How did you start lifting? Was it for sports, or was it just?
I was actually, when I was in high school, 10th grade. I write about this on the site a lot, but I was 98 pounds in 10th grade, and probably 5'9", 5'10", and I was basically beyond skinny. And I went out. I was a wrestler. I wrestled 98 my 10th my sophomore year. And when I graduated high school, I was about 125 pounds, maybe 5'11". Right now I'm 6'1", about 230, but, you know, I wasn't always that way. You know, it's been a lot of training, a lot of, you know, trial and error. And, you know, I really decided after college to get serious about, you know, learning what it takes, you know, to build strength, build muscle, all that stuff. So, you know, training for 20 years, but really, really serious, you know, after college. So about 15 years.
About 15 years?
Yeah. When I went to college, there wasn't much wrestling, just a lot of drinking.
Yeah, that's usually what happens there.
Yeah.
What, you have a pretty really informative and one of the, in my opinion, one of the best websites on the internet right now for, you know, true knowledge on how to get strong and build muscle. How did you come about the Diva Crew? Like, how did that come about?
Well, the name Diesel Crew is actually a funny story. When I got certified as a strength coach, I met up with Jed Johnson. He was a high school athlete, and he was a really good baseball pitcher, and he was just, you know, just enormous for a high school kid. And I believe like 10th or 11th grade, he was, you know, 6'2", 215, just rock solid, you know, just a big, big kid. And I remember seeing him train at the gym, and I kind of took him under my wing and really started getting him interested in strength training. And he, you know, eventually went and became certified as well, and we kind of started collaborating together, and that's how Diesel Crew formed. We started the website, and it was really, really basic HTML code. And the cool thing about Diesel Crew was it was sort of like one of the original strength blogs out there before all this WordPress stuff came to be. We used to update the homepage, you know, basically every day or every other day with new videos. We would film videos, and actually you can embed the video right into the HTML. So people would go to our site. It was even before YouTube, and they would stream the videos off our site. I remember one time we got a bill from our host that it was, you know, a couple $100s, because what happened was people were going there and just hitting play and just kept repeating and repeating the videos. You know, they were really into it. And eventually what we did was we started putting code where you have to save the video locally, you know, because they were just streaming off the site all day, and we would just get these huge bills from our hosts. But it was a cool site because, like I said, you know, we had all kinds of cool videos, like stuff people had never seen. They were doing, I remember one of the first videos we did a Zercher squat with Iron Mind grippers in our hands. So it was like, you know, it was this crazy, crazy strength training that no one had ever seen. And we actually did like some funny videos, like, well, not funny, but, you know, just reaching out to the old time strongman. We did like Steinborn lifts and two hands anyhow, and just some old, old lifts that, you know, we thought would be really cool to kind of bring back and inform others, you know, that these things used to happen all the time. So Diesel started really small HTML site, and I used to go in and modify that code every day, and we just kind of progressed from there.
That's really cool. And for anybody out there that doesn't know, like, the HTML coding, most everything's done on blogs today, and it makes it 100 times easier to work with. So that was a lot of work, especially getting bills like that every month. I can only imagine the stress there.
Yeah, it was crazy.
We got quite a few questions submitted for you tonight, Smitty, so I'll jump right into that. First one here, I'm sorry, guys, I forgot to ask for everybody's name on the questions. That was my fault. So if you recognize the question, you submitted it, you know, this is for you. First one was kind of funny, but I want a body like Arnold. Well, how can I get it quickly? I need your help. I had to add that one in there because I thought that was kind of funny. So.
No, that's great. That's a good question. I actually hear that a lot. The first thing you got to realize when, you know, you see people in a magazine that you want to emulate, or they have a physique that you kind of like, you have to realize that it's all genetics as far as how the muscle is shaped. So if you want to look like Arnold and have the muscle shape that Arnold has, you better have Arnold's parents, you know, and it's basically that simple. But your shape, the shape of your muscle is determined by genetics. And it really kills me, like, all these infomercials that say, you know, long, lean muscles, or, you know, even on YouTube where people, I don't know, trainers or people who are into fitness, they post videos like, you know, get a real nice peak on your bicep, all that stuff. That doesn't, you can't hang off a preacher bench with dumbbells, with your legs up and all this stuff to try to get a peak on your bicep. It's not going to work. You can build muscle, you can increase your muscle size, but the shape is determined by genetics. So that's the first thing you want to realize when you try to emulate someone. But if you want to be like Arnold, man, you just got to get in the gym, and you got to train consistently over the course of 20, 30, 40 years. It has to be consistent. You know, when people start a muscle building program or strength program, you know, they go in there and they kind of get discouraged. They don't see the results. And I'm here to tell you, man, it works. You got to put your head down, and you just got to grind it out, and you just got to be in there day in and day out and just eat right and just get lots of rest. And that's how it works. And it's really as simple as that. I mean, if you're a skinny guy, ectomorph, you can't gain weight, well, if I ask you, are you eating enough? And you tell me, yeah, I want, you know, write it down. Are you eating 4 meals a day, 5 meals a day? If you're not gaining weight, eat 6 meals a day. If you're not gaining weight, eat 7 meals a day. I mean, I had some athletes over the years, you know, they're so skinny and just trying to gain weight. I would have them get up. You got to think, when is the longest time your body goes without food? When you're sleeping, right? So 8-9 hours you're sleeping, you don't have food. So I used to have them get up in the middle of the night, take a protein shake, you know, eat something. So you're basically in a fasted state for those 8 hours. So if you want to gain weight, there's always a way. And if you're saying you're eating enough and you're still not gaining weight, eat more.
I know when I was coming up trying to gain weight, because I started, I weighed about 170 pounds.
And you had me beat by about 50 pounds.
Yeah, I wasn't on the extreme spectrum that most people were, but I still have probably horrible genetics just like everybody else out there. But one of the things I did, which was kind of funny, is I couldn't get over 200 to save my life. So I used to literally in my protein shakes, I would put Snickers bars and Three Musketeers and all kinds of stuff just for calories.
Right.
And then I remember reading an article on Elite Fitness Systems, EliteFTS.com, that was I laughed about it, but then I did it, and next thing I know, I put on like 10 pounds. It was Oreo soup. It was a sleeve of Oreos at night and milk before you go to bed. Probably not the best. Probably not the best way to gain, but
right.
I ask people if they want to gain weight to do that. I say, hey, just do that for about a month.
Yep.
And then they look at you like you're an idiot. But
well, that's definitely one way to do it.
But moving on to the next question here. What would your recommendation for a beginning workout routine for a 40-year-old man who has never lifted weights before and is currently sedentary and only has access to the mainstream health club?
Well, what I would do, you're 40 years old, you've never lifted weights, you're probably lacking some flexibility. I mean, over the years, we tend to lose flexibility. I know I have. I'm almost 40 myself, so I'm getting up there. I train with guys that are, you know, early 20s, and some of my athletes are in the high school, so, you know, they kind of blow me away with mobility and flexibility stuff, but the key is to always strive for increasing your mobility and your flexibility. So you're 40. What you got to do is you got to start stretching. You got to start warming up. You got to start loosening your body up in preparation to work out. We're going to, at the end of this call, I think Ryan's going to give me a minute to talk about AMD. But the key is before you work out, now this is for someone who's never worked out before, is you got to prepare your body to get into the workout. Now, that's one of my biggest issues with all these muscle-building programs on the net. Basically, what they do is they just give you the primary exercise. Like, they on the sheet or on the form or wherever you're seeing this muscle-building program, it basically says, all right, I'm going to come in and do 4 sets of 8 on bench, 3 sets of 10 pull-ups, 4 sets of 8 curls, you know, it basically gives you the workout. And there's nothing wrong with that except the fact that a real good workout has a lot more stuff than that. You can't just come out of your car after sitting at work all day, you're in presentations, you're in meetings, or you're on your feet digging ditches, pumping gas, all this stuff. You have to prepare your body to get under that tension. So when you go into the weight room, you can't just lay on the bench and do 4 sets of 10 on the bench. You have to warm up your upper back. You have to warm up your arms, your legs, your hips. You have to break a sweat. You have to increase that core temperature. So the first thing I would do, like I said, is just get moving and realize when you start going back into the commercial gym, you said you're going into a commercial gym, you have to warm up. Okay, we got to get moving. You got to get a blood flowing. You got to get the sweat going. Then with your workout, what I would concentrate on first as you get back into it is body weight exercises. I mean, it can never be stressed enough. Now, when you're in a program, you have to realize there's a progression and regression to everything. Now, if you're coming in as someone who hasn't trained in a while, you have to regress back to the most basic form of exercise, body weight movements, push-ups, sit-ups, dips, leg raises, lunges, body weight squats, stuff like that. And you start hitting that for reps. Now, your whole workout could be, oh, I go in, I warm up, I do some activation stuff, I do some foam roller. Then, for my workout, I could say, today, I'm going to do 50 pull-ups, 100 dips, and 100 body weight squats. That could be your workout. And you just hit it as many sets as it takes that reach those numbers. Okay, it can be as simple as that. and you're going to be sore. Trust me.
Okay? Yeah, 100 I would dips start, will level anybody.
Right, right. So, I'm not saying going and hit 100. I'm just saying as an example, you know, as you start going back in there, it could be as simple as that. Pick a number and try to reach that number in the fewest number of sets as possible. So, you know, you might come in and say, today I'm going to hit 60 push-ups, I'm going to hit 40 dips, and I'm going to hit 20 pull-ups. You know, that could be your workout. Then at the end, the way I progress my workouts is you come in, you warm up, you hit your workout, and then at the end you have some time to put in some extra stretching, some rehab work, some activation stuff, whatever you need as an individual to bring up, you know, bring up your strength or bring up a weakness, whatever. Okay, so my advice to someone who hasn't worked out in a while is make sure when you get back in the gym, you're warming up very thoroughly. Okay, don't just lay on the bench. You know, you haven't been there in a while. Put on, you know, hit the bar, hit a quarter, hit a plate, hit a quarter plate. Don't do that. Okay, start with body weight stuff. Get acclimated to that tension again, that tension on your body. Okay, and just take it slow. Progress very slow. And the other part is, with these body weight movements, you're really going to see some compensation. So let's say you go in, your goal today is to hit 30 body weight squats. You go, and when you do your squats, you can't really get down too low. Okay, your knees are creaking, your ankles are real tight, you're dipping forward. It's really going to show you where you need to work on. Okay, so you're going to work on your ankle mobility. You're going to stretch your hips out. You're going to start stretching out your back and your lats and different things. And as you progress with these body weight movements, you're going to start hitting lower depths on the squat. Your shoulders are going to feel real strong for the dips. You know, your back's going to get stronger with the pull-ups. But really watch yourself. Are you compensating one way? Is there a weakness? Is there something you can work on? Now, as you bring those up with the body weight movements, then you can progress to dumbbells, barbells. But just concentrate on form and just look for where you need to work.
Awesome. I mean, I think it's definitely a misconception nowadays that people just totally think bodyweight exercises do not work. And it's kind of a horrible thing, in my opinion. Like,
Well, look at gymnasts. I mean, those guys are shredded and they do tons of bodyweight exercises.
And most of those guys, I mean, you read stories about them going in and bench pressing after never bench pressing before, and putting up, you know, double bodyweight bench presses and just sick numbers.
You know,
that most people would just be like, wow, I'd love to have that.
I mean, you got to think about it, too. Like I said, with bodyweight exercises, it really reveals weaknesses. I gave you the squat example, but how about lunges? Let's say you lunge down and your knees turn inward, or your knees turn outward, or, you know, you can't really get down in the lunge, your hips are too tight. Watch all those compensations, because those are things that you really want to work on before you start adding tension. Now, when you're performing weight training, strength training, muscle building, any of that stuff, however you want to label it, you're basically adding tension to your body. Okay, so is the tension coming from body weight movements? Is it coming from barbell movements? Is it coming from dumbbell movements? It doesn't matter. It's all tension. So body weight movements is going to give you the least amount of tension. And you want to make sure you work on your weaknesses under the body weight movements and different things like that before you start adding even more tension, because then you might not see those compensations. Like if I do a single unilateral lunge, I'm really going to see some compensations in my knees, my hips, my ankles. But if I go to a barbell squat, I'm not going to see that necessarily. So it's really important. Sometimes those compensations get masked because the movement is like a compound movement, and your body finds the path of least resistance, and you can actually do the movement, and it's going to mask those compensations. So start with body weight. See where you need to work and really develop those before you progress to a higher level type of strength training, if that makes sense.
Oh, definitely. And one thing to add to that is, too, is once you get to a certain level of body, you know, that you're doing with your body weight, you actually probably have a knowledge of training at that point, too, because most people go in, they start getting obsessed with training, and they want to learn more and more about it.
Yep.
That's one of the fun things I've learned.
And the thing, too, is necessarily you don't have to progress quickly. You can start slow, and as you get proficient at those bodyweight movements, you can overload those bodyweight movements with, like, med balls. You could take elastic bands. You could overload with chains. I mean, we use all these type of ways to load the athlete, and they're still hitting bodyweight movements, but we're overloading them because they progress from unloaded movements to overloaded movements. Okay, so dumbbell, again, what I want you to realize is there's so many tools out there. There's sandbags, there's kettlebells, there's barbells, there's dumbbells, there's elastic bands, there's all these tools, but it's just adding tension to the body. And your body doesn't know the difference between those different implements. All it knows is tension. So if I'm doing bodyweight movements, I can add more tension just by adding an elastic band. I don't need to go to a barbell. I don't need to go to a dumbbell until I'm ready.
Good stuff. All right. So next question here. This is it's actually a pretty important, but it's an important question. There seems to be a delicate balance between hard training and hard rest. How do you define both, and what is their ideal relationship to one another?
Wow.
you worded that pretty well, I have to say.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Well, we could talk for hours just on this subject, but I will do my best to kind of summarize. Here's the deal. Now, when you go into the weight room, again, we're putting the body under tension. Now, if we put the body under tension, at some point we're going to have to relax that tension, okay, and that's the recovery. So depending on how intense that tension is, we can increase the intensity, the duration of the workouts long. Depending on how intense we create that tension, okay, the more recovery we need, okay? So let's say I'm a bodybuilder, and I go into the gym, you know, 5-6 days a week. Every day I'm going in there, and I'm just hitting reps and reps, and I'm increasing the weight, and I'm hitting reps and reps. Now, that bodybuilder is never going to fully recover because they're not giving themselves a day off, okay? And that's essential. Now, recovery means when your body has tension on it, it adapts. This is called the SED principle. You guys know that. Specific adaptation to imposed demands. It means that if I create tension, your body wants to overcome that tension, so it becomes stronger. It rebuilds muscle. It increases muscle size, okay? That's what hypertrophy means. That's what muscle building means. I've created a tension greater than the tension that was created before, so my body adapts. Now, if I create that tension, I have to have recovery, and that recovery means I need to return to homeostasis. I need to come up to my baseline level of homeostasis. That means that I've hit tension, I've done a workout, and I've recovered myself. So what are the types of ways I can recover? I can recover faster if I get more sleep, I use good nutrition, I drink lots of water, I stretch, I put in days of rest or active recovery, I use a foam roller. Okay, all these things allow me to recover faster. Okay, so the balance is you need to listen to your body. When you come into the weight room, okay, there's a lot of indicators that tell me. Now, as a strength coach, I look at these indicators all the time. And you have to be willing to adjust your program because of these indicators. Now, just because your workout says you got to go into the weight room, you got to hit 3 sets of 6 squat, you got to do all these pull-ups, you got to do these power cleans. After that first set, you notice something with the athlete or the person. They're not really, you know, locking out the squat. They're feeling kind of tired. They look kind of pale. You know, the first thing I ask them, you know, how are you feeling? And I have to be willing as a coach to tell them, well, today we're not going to do all these squats. Today we're not going to do these pull-ups. You're going to hit more foam roller. You're going to hit some more mobility. Okay, you're going to drink lots of water, and then you're going to go home. You have to make real-time adjustments during the workout, okay? Because that's essential. Okay, I talked about indicators. So the athlete, I look at their hands, okay? This is really important. Look at their hands. Are their hands normal color, or are they really red? Okay, really red is telling me, hey, they're overtrained. Are they sensitive to light? You know, are the lights in the gym like really bright? You know, do they feel? You know, are they squinting? You ask them. You know, the lights seem light, bright to you. Do the noises in the gym? You know, are they really sharp today? You know, are they really giving you a problem? These are all indicators. You know, you have to talk to them that they're overtrained, and I have to, as a coach, as a person who's responsible for them reaching their goals, them getting a good workout, them being healthy and strong, I have to make adjustments. And that's when I say, okay, you're overtrained. The CNS is telling us something. Okay, your parasympathetic nervous system is telling me that you need to recover. Okay, all these indicators. So that day, like I said, we might go regress. Remember, there's a progression and regression. We could regress back to body weight or even further back to just stretching, mobility, foam roller, all that stuff. So it's a delicate balance. Now, like I said, just to summarize, if the workout session is very, very intense, you're going to need more recovery. If the workout session involves big muscle groups, you're going to need more recovery. If the workout session is long, you're going to need more recovery. Okay, it's just normal, just logical thinking. Just think, did I hit a big workout? Okay, well, I need to recover. I can't come in tomorrow and hit the same gigantic workout. Okay, it's an ebb and flow. You have to, you know, peak up that intensity, and then you have to let it drop off and recover. And you have to always shoot, like I said, to get back to that homeostasis. Okay, good nutrition, lots of sleep, lots of water, lots of stretching, lots of foam roller.
Good stuff.
And that's it.
One of the things too, I think, a lot of times you see with athletes, and I'm sure you see it a lot. I know I see it when I'm at Elliott's gym. Is like you'll see one kid come in and he's just, you know he's busted up and not feeling it, but you have an environment of like 10 other people that are just ready to you know, kill it. How do you deal with something like a situation like that? Do you just have him do something different, or do you know?
Well, listen, they're part of the program or they're not. You know what I mean? If they come in and say, well, I'm going to hit this workout anyway. I don't care what you say. And I see that, you know, they're not hitting their prescribed numbers. You know, all these things are happening where I can tell that they're not on point. They're either part of the program or they're not. If they're in my program, they have to listen to me. If they're not going to, then they're out. And you have to be the same way with yourself. I mean, you're responsible for yourself. If you get this program off an internet site or you buy a program, you go to the gym and, again, it's telling you to do this prescribed volume of exercises, and you're not feeling it, listen to your body. That's so important. It's not a race, okay? You have to be in this for long term. You have to be in this, you want to be lifting to your 80, 90. It's really important to listen to your body. And I'll tell you what, if you take the time to recover, regress back, stretch out more, lots of water when you come into the gym, and you're not really feeling it, just take that time off. When you get back into the gym, you're going to feel 10 times stronger, trust me. Yeah, it's proven over and over and over. So the worst thing about training guy athletes is that, you know, they just got that testosterone, and they come in, their boys are hitting it and stuff. Now, you know, there's different levels of overtraining. He might come in, he's not, you know, 100% back, but he can still do the volume. We just lower the intensity, okay? He might be in there, you know, 75, 85% of his one rep max. We might lower him back to 50 to 60. You know what I mean? He can still hit the volume, but we just lower the intensity. Intensity, in this case, meaning the weight he's lifting. Okay, there's all kinds of intensity. You could make something more intense by increasing the weight, increasing the speed at which you lift, decrease the rest period in between sets. So there's all kinds of ways you can increase the intensity. So, typically, you get that respect. You earn that respect with your athletes, and if you tell them they need to recover, then they typically listen. But I know exactly what you're talking about. It happens all the time.
Yep. And you got to appreciate those ones that just want to go gung-ho all the time. But you're like, oh, well, wait till you're like 40.
Right. It's nice to be young. I used to be the same way. I mean, go in there and, I mean, we used to train 4 or 5 days a week, and we would just kill it, tons of volume. But I wish I could go back and just slap myself in the face and just say, wake up. This isn't the way to do it. And I wish somebody would have had the knowledge to come and tell me that, you know, there's a smarter, better way to train. Now, tell me this. Do you want to go into the weight room and hit an hour and a half workout and just, you know, like you go to work all day, you go to the gym, and you're in there an hour and a half, and then you finally get home to see your kids and they're in bed? No. You want to go to the gym, kill it for 40 minutes, and get out, you know. So in that 40 minutes, you got to hit it, you know, with high intensity, do some recovery, hit your foam roller, rehab some stuff, and it can be done, trust me. It can be done within 40 minutes, so, and then you get in and out. So don't go to the gym and just draw it out into this hour and a half marathon. Kill it and then get out. And I'm telling you, you're going to have so much more time to recover, and your workouts, yeah, I mean, if you're in there an hour and a half, 3, 4, 5 times a week, you're going to get burnt out, and you're not going to want to go to the gym. So to keep it fresh, keep the intensity high, keep the training session short, and make sure you're getting all the key elements of a good workout in there.
Awesome. And to go on that for a second, do you, in your AMD program, you lay all that out for them, correct?
Yep.
That's all simplified in,
see,
the, in your system?
That's exactly right. Now, I'll go back and touch on the point where I talked about other programs. Now, I haven't seen many programs, but the ones I've seen, again, they give you the workout. That's great. But I cannot go in to the gym after working all day, okay, and then have lay down on the bench and start banging out reps, okay? AMD, here's the cool thing about AMD. It provides you a nice step-by-step template that says, when I walk into the gym, this is exactly what I do, okay? By the time I'm done with this warm-up, I'm going to be sweating, I'll be ready to go, everything is charged up, and then I get into the workout. Now, I provide 16 weeks of workouts in the AMD template, and it progresses in different phases. After that 16 weeks, the cool thing is you now have the knowledge to create your own workouts, which is something that all the other programs don't do. They give you the workouts, and then what do you do after that 12, 16 weeks? You have no idea. I teach you to say, okay, here's the format. Here's everything you need in a good workout. Now, can you start over with AMD and start back at phase one? Sure. Or you could progress to maybe Wendler's 531. You could do West Side. It fits into the template. Okay, there's a template there. It says go in, warm up, mobility, foam roll, activate, primary workout, and then you do your core stuff, and then you do your rehab. It's all laid out. So you can do any program with AMD once you're done with the 16 weeks, or you could keep on AMD. It's totally up to you. But the key is, what are the key elements in a good muscle building program? And I lay all that out for you.
Awesome. All right. Moving on. The next one we got is, this is a really in-depth question, so I'm going to try to simplify it. And whoever sent this in, I sent this over to Smitty, so I'm sure he'll be glad to answer it via personal email. But what type of lift should I implement into the AMD template for the bench press if I have difficulties pressing the bar off of my chest? I have a one rep max bench press test in 9 weeks. I'm going to use 2 4-week mini cycles prior to the test. I plan on incorporating close grip, floor presses, neutral dumbbell presses, horizontal rows, and bent over rows, and a lot of other accessory exercises. So basically, I think he is asking, how does he press off the chest stronger while incorporating that into your template?
Well, I mean, incorporating the AMD template is just, what am I going to do for my primary exercise? So your 1 to 2 bench press workouts a week, I mean, it sounds like the guy's doing West Side or something similar. So he probably has like a max effort and then some speed work or repetitive effort work on the second day of upper body. So what I would say, if you're having trouble off the chest, I mean, there's tons of stuff you can do. Banded bench. I mean, you know what jump stretch bands are. Now, I don't recommend jump stretch bands anymore because Elite Fitness has their own bands. So
yeah.
I would recommend Elite Fitness bands. So mini bands wrapped around each end of the bar. You can set it up in a power cage, or you could put dumbbells underneath the bar. And you take the mini band, you anchor it on the dumbbell, come up over the end of the bar, and go back down under the dumbbell. So you're basically benching against the tension of the bands. Now, the cool thing is the bands force you to press harder. They force you to press faster, and they force you to stay really freaking tight on the bench. Now, bench pressing is a very funny lift because, especially on Mondays, National Bench Day, everyone comes in and they hit bench on Mondays. But bench is so technical, and people don't realize. I mean, you could liken it to Olympic weightlifting, because Olympic weightlifting, the lifts, the clean and jerk and snatch, are so technical, both of them. So what you want to realize is the bench is not just an upper body exercise. It's a full body exercise. There's a lot of leg drive. There's a lot of tension you need to create. Now, I'm giving you elastic bands, you know, speed benching against mini bands. But the key to any lift is you start back at the form, okay? Form has to be tight. Now, when you're working on your bench, all your warm-up sets, the great thing about all your warm-up sets is they can become, just perfecting your technique. You can perfect your technique as you warm up, you know, as the weight's lighter. Really work on creating tension in your upper back, pulling the bar down, correcting your elbows, driving your feet down, keeping your hips on the bench. All those types of things can be done, and you should always be working back to that form. Okay, so I just wanted to make that little point about how important form is with bench pressing. Now, I have a bench press video on YouTube. I think it's over 100,000 hits, but it's really good. It has one of my workout partners, Brad. He's, just a freak of nature. He's so strong, but he demos how to do a bench press. Now, it goes step by step, you know, how to unrack it, and also talks about how to spot it, which is, you know, there's a football player, a college football player, got injured really bad with a bar, fell on his neck just recently within the last month. But you have to realize the spot is really important too. So make sure the spot is tight. Make sure the form is tight. Okay, so we have speed benching against pins, or speed benching against mini bands. The other thing you can do is pin press. Now, pin press is basically you set up two pins in the power cage, and you put a roll-away bench inside the power cage. Now, the first pin is at your chest height, okay? So it's if you get under the bar, I mean, the bar is actually touching your chest, and it's on the pins. The second pin is one notch up, okay? So you have two pins, and the bar is sandwiched in between. Now, the key here is you set up in the bench, you drive your feet down, you arch your back, and you drive the bar into the top pin. And basically what you're going to do is a really, really hard isometric. Now, that isometric, the cool thing about isometrics are they create a ton of tension, and they strengthen the joint angle that you are set up as. So, and I think it's plus or minus 15, 20 degrees of whatever joint angle you are. So you're creating a ton of tension right there at your chest, and you're really focusing on your sticking point. Okay, so pin presses is good. The other thing I would say is a lot of people don't realize that you need a really strong upper back to bench heavy weight. Okay, so work on pull-ups, work on face pulls, work on bent over rows, work on lots of, he was doing some rows in there. Do lots of rows, lots of pull-ups, and just lots of stuff for your rotator cuff. You know, again, bench press, and we're talking about tension here, puts a lot of tension on your chest, puts a lot of tension on the insertion of your pecs, your shoulder complex, your rotator cuff, all that stuff. So we need to strengthen those areas, and we need to release the tension. You can get a lacrosse ball in there, start rolling that lacrosse ball across your pecs, across your back, do some shoulder stretches. I mean, everything has to be on point, okay? And that's you know, a couple tips I could give you for increasing the strength off the chest.
All right. Moving on to the next question here. We have let's see, which muscle groups do you commonly work together when using a three-day full body workout?
Could you say that again? Which muscle groups do you
Which muscle groups do you commonly work together when using a three-day full-body workout type split? So I assume, you know, how would you set up a template if somebody can only do three full-body workouts in 1 week?
Well, if you're doing a full-body workout, you're working all the muscle groups, right?
Yeah.
So actually, in AMD, we put together the first phase of AMD is all full-body workouts. Again, it was structured for the person that either has been away. Phase one is structured just to get the person acclimated, one, to how to perform the exercise with good form, but just get them back into the gym. Okay, so we have full-body workouts, which are great for novice lifters or, like I said, people who've been out of the game for a while, just to get you acclimated to all that tension, get you back in the gym, and start, get you on your way to building some strength and muscle. Full-body workout, the way we do it, is we pick typically one primary movement for the upper body, one primary movement for the lower body, okay, for each workout. And then everything else is supplemental. It helps build the muscle groups that are responsible for that primary movement. So you might have one workout that is a squat and a close grip bench press. So we have one primary movement for the lower body, one primary movement for the upper body, okay? Mm. And then, you know, you want to pick the exercises, again, that give you the most bang for your buck. You want to get in and out of the gym. So stuff like pull-ups and dips, power cleans. Your other workout could be deadlifts and power cleans or, power cleans and bench press. Whatever you want to do, just make sure you're covering all the bases. And for a full-body workout, it's pretty simple. Like I said, just pick one primary movement for the upper, okay, a solid compound movement, and one primary movement for lower, again, a compound movement. And then work all your accessory lifts in there, you know, just to round out the workout, okay? And you can look at it from a movement pattern perspective. You know, if you'll hit all the muscle groups if you hit all the strength training movement patterns, like horizontal push-pull, vertical push-pull, and hip dominant and quad dominant, which is basically like a squat and a lunge or an RDL and a good morning, stuff like that.
Awesome. Good stuff. All right. Moving on to the next question here. What's the best way to set up a training program for people with little or no experience to get the fastest results? I know we kind of touched on this, but it seems like we got a lot of new lifters listening to this evening, so I want to make sure they get the most benefit out of this.
Definitely. I would definitely go back to my previous answer. I mean, the 40-year-old guy who's been out of the gym for a while or has never lifted, you have to start at the basics, okay? And again, when you start training, when you start doing your push-ups and everything else, it's going to show you weaknesses. I mean, I've had guys come in, and when we start them on the bodyweight movements, they might push to the side when they do a push-up, or they can't go all the way down for lunge, or when they press, you know, a med ball overhead, they can't lock out their head through. You know, there's all these little indicators that I can see, okay, and we can fix before we start overloading. So my best advice, if you haven't trained or you've never been in the gym, okay, go in, stretch out, okay, do some leg swings and start doing some push-ups, start doing some pull-ups. If you can't do pull-ups, you can do inverted rows. You could get a Elite Fitness band and you could wrap it around your knees and do pull-ups with that. I mean, there's so many alternatives and there's so many regressions to exercises to get you moving again, okay? And the key is, and the other thing I want to talk about is if you're a beginner, don't do isolation exercises. I want you doing compound movements that involve tons of muscle groups that get you working through a full range of motion. Now, it doesn't help me or it doesn't help you progress to reach your goals if your workout, let's say you pick today, I'm going to pick a simple workout. I'm going to hit 50 bodyweight squats. And you go in, you hit your squats, but you're only going halfway down. Now, I teach my athletes and the people I train, you need to go all the way down. I need to make sure that you're hitting a full range of motion, because I know that a full range of motion activates more muscle fibers. It allows you to move freer and allows you to get, especially for squats, it opens up your hips. There's no more back pain. I mean, there's so many things that are beneficial for full range of motion movements, okay? It removes inflammation, all this stuff. You got to think about, I'm at the computer all day, I'm on the couch, I'm playing Xbox, all this stuff, it's locking on my hips, it's creating poor posture, and those types of things are going to shut down my muscle groups, and I need to open them up, I need to activate them, I need to do a full range of motion, okay? So point number two, full range of motion. Point number one is body weight movements. Point number two is full range of motion. And you got to start cleaning up your nutrition. You got to start eating better. You got to start eating more frequently. You got to get rid of, you know, all the breads and pastas and rices, and you got to start eating good vegetables, fruits, all that stuff. Okay, so it's mind, body, spirit. You got to do it all. It's a holistic approach. You got to change your life, and you got to start going to the gym consistently, and that's it.
Awesome. All right, next one. What do you prefer, a full body routine or splits, and what's your opinion on the two?
I think they're both great. Now, where do we start? We always start with full body, okay? We need to get the person acclimated to the gym, get them acclimated to all these exercises. Then as they progress, okay, as they become more of an intermediate lifter, an intermediate trainee, then we can start focusing on an upper and lower split. Okay, we can put more focus, more volume on the upper, more focus and more volume, more intensity on the lower. So it's a progression. I love them both. I use them both. And you have to start somewhere. So where we start, we progress from a point of very simple, okay, which is body weight stuff, to something more complex. As they get better, we do an upper-lower split. So what is the best? I think they're both great at different stages of development, okay? We always start, again, with the full body and progress to the upper-lower, because as you progress, then remember what I said. It is a specific adaptation to imposed demands. As you adapt to these exercises, as you adapt to a certain volume for your full body, then we need to start focusing more on separating the upper and lower, because your body needs more tension, it needs more intensity, and needs more focus to continue that adaptation. Okay, so you need to focus. Both are good, and it's just what stage of development the lifter's in.
Awesome. Next question here. Let's see. This is he. Let me try to paraphrase this. He currently has a lower back L4 L5 issue, and he had surgery nine months ago. And his doctor told him to refrain from lifting weights for the rest of his life. He says, obviously, that's not going to work. So he can't really do exercise like power cleans, deadlifts, and squats. What recommendations do you think he has? Or what do you think he can do if he just wants to mainly focus on upper body and stay in somewhat general shape?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll preface this by saying, you know, I can't prescribe anything that the doctor won't allow, okay? That's something I'm not going to get into. But I would say that as a general recommendation, and not specifically for you, but as a general recommendation, people with lower back injuries, I first want to focus on reestablishing stability in that lower back. Okay, that's my goal. Now, how do I do that? Have you ever heard of a plank? I know you have, right, Ryan? Plank is basically setting up in a push-up position, okay, but you're actually on your elbows. So you're on your forearms and elbows, and you're in a push-up position. That's basically a plank. And a plank is usually held for time, 30 seconds, a minute, et cetera. And it's one of the most basic foundational core exercises. And it, it also allows us to stabilize the lower back. Now, a lot of people can't do, if they have a lower back injury, they can't do a plank. So what we do is we do a plank against the wall. I take them up against the wall maybe 2-3 feet away, and I let them lean into the wall on their forearms and just let them hold that for time. Now, as they get stronger and as they learn to brace their abdominals and create some isometric contraction across their torso, I walk them back away from the wall, and they continue hitting that plank. So what we're doing is, again, allowing them to adapt to the tension and allowing them to move at their own pace, reestablish stability in that lower back. So they can hit a plank against the wall. We walk them out. As they get stronger, then we can progress to a plank on the floor that where they're on their knees, sort of like if someone can't do a push-up, we allow them to do push-ups on their knees. So we do a plank on their knees. As they get stronger there, then they can go to the full execution of the lift where they're in a full push-up position and they're on their forearms and they're holding that plank for time. Other things I like to use to reestablish the lower back is working on that hip mobility. Okay, you need most everybody has bad hip posture. You know, they have anterior pelvic tilt, they have tight hip flexors, they have tight hamstrings. And all that stuff leads to lower back pain, okay? So you need to open up those hips. You need to do some leg swings. You need to do some lunges. You need to do some striders. I mean, you need to do some you could do high hurdles over, like what you do is high hurdle is basically lifting your leg over a hurdle, okay, while you remain neutral with your torso. Now, a lot of people don't have hurdles in the gym, so what you do is you set up a barbell in the power cage, and you lift your leg up and over the barbell, the end of the barbell, put the barbell about hip height, and you go back and forth over the barbell at the end of the barbell with both legs. So that's sort of like a high hurdle. The key is just opening up those hips. Another movement you can do is get down on all fours, your hands and knees, and you start, you lift one leg up, and you bend the leg 90 degrees. And what I call these is ABCs. A lot of people call them fire hydrants, but I have the athlete draw the alphabet with their knee. So you basically imagine like there's a pencil on your knee, and you just kind of draw the alphabet with your knee. And by the time you're done, your hip is just burning. You're just activating those muscles of the hip. You can do striders, open up those hips as far as increasing mobility. There's other things like squat to stand. It's basically you plant your hands on the floor while you're standing upright, squat down, and then you stand right up. There's all these things, and they're demoed in Eric Cressy and Mike Robertson's Magnificent Mobility. They're also in AMD, so you can also Google them or YouTube or whatever. But the key is focusing on opening those hips up and reestablishing stability in the lower back. Other things that do that, I like kettlebell swings as long as the form is right. What else? Back extensions. Now, a lot of people do back extensions incorrectly. They round their back over, they hyperextend way up. You want to make sure when you do back extensions that you remain in neutral. Okay, neutral basically means your back is flat. When your back starts rounding over or starts rounding up like you're arching up real hard, that's putting damage or just, you know, irritation on the lower back that you don't need, okay? So you want to make sure when you're reestablishing strength and stability in that lower back, you just always remain in neutral, okay? So
You did a video on that, didn't you?
Yep. I did a video on how to do a reverse hyper or how we use the reverse hyper. And a lot of people use too much weight on it. They swing it, and they're just promoting mobility in that lower lumbar, which you definitely don't want to do.
Would you recommend like sled dragging for somebody like that?
Sled. The activation of the glutes is essential to maintaining lower back health because your glutes play a key role in maintaining pelvic alignment. So I would definitely say sled dragging. Now, what Ryan's talking about is, you know, strongman sled where you have straps and you take it outside and you sled drag. But if you don't have that, another way you can do it is if you're in a commercial gym, you just take an Olympic plate. Now, it could be like a 25-pound plate. It could be a 45-pound plate. It could be 100. You put it smooth side down, and you bend down, and you just put your hands on top of the plate, and you start driving it across the floor. Now, I use this with the athletes when we can't go outside because it's raining or it's wintertime. But the whole key, what are we trying to do? We're trying to activate those glutes. Activate the glutes, increase your hip mobility, and just reestablish that lower back strength and stability. So as a general rule, those are some things that you can do to rehab a lower back injury. But for this guy, you know, if the doctor's telling him not to do anything, I'm not going to recommend anything. So, but I can definitely throw out some general recommendations.
And definitely if you decide to push a plate across the floor at your commercial gym, be prepared for some strange looks, and you might not even have... You might not even have that gym membership after that day. So,
right. Well, it'd probably be better if you got your own gym in your garage or whatever. You'd probably get better results anyway.
Definitely. Well, we're getting on an hour. So, I mean, do you want to keep answering some questions? Do you have anywhere to be? Or
no, I'm good.
All right. We'll answer a couple more, like two or three more from these folks. All right. Kind of a here's a good one. What is a common misconception that you see athletes have when starting training, whether with you or with other people?
Common misconception. I don't know, maybe one of the ones that everyone has where if they lift light weights, they're going to get lean, ripped muscles for tons of volume. I mean, that's like one of the worst fitness myths ever propagated across the industry or across mainstream media. You know, you see all these commercials where, you know, they're teaching these women. I mean, women just love to hear long, lean muscles. Yoga gives you long, lean muscles. That's such bullshit. I mean, it's your muscles, again, are determined by genetics, and the leanness is determined by body fat levels. So if you lift light pink weights and all this crap, you're not going to get long, lean muscles. You're just going to get weaker, and you're not going to achieve anything. You know, another misconception is, you know, women getting bulky from lifting heavy weights. They don't have the testosterone to get bulky, thick, large muscles. So that's another common misconception. Another, I could rattle these off all day. I mean, core training, lots, thousands of reps are going to get you a six pack. No, it's body weight, or it's body fat. A low body fat is going to show your abdominals. Everyone has abs; they're just covered in most individuals.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Another question here, because we could go all day on that one, but those are some definite good ones. One of the things I would also see too, that to go with that, is the fact that all high school athletes want to bench press. That's all they ever seem to want to do. But they're afraid to squat. Let's
okay, go ahead.
You can go off, Scott. I'd rather hear the tangent.
I have one of my wrestlers right now talking about bench press. He was talking about one of his teammates and how, oh, he benches all this weight. And my first question to the guy I train is, well, how much does he squat? How much does he deadlift? Because those are the key exercises I want to know about. Everyone bench presses. I don't care about that. I want to know how much you can pull off the floor, how much you can squat. Those are better indicators for athletes. You know what I'm saying? So I don't care how much this guy bench presses. Subsequently, he told me the guy injured his shoulder. I mean, all he does is go in and bench press. And, you know, it's a crappy technique, elbows flared out. And, you know, if that's all he's concentrating on, you know he's not providing a balance of the musculature that keeps the shoulders healthy and happy. I mean, the bench is as much of the muscles you can't see as the muscles you can see. I mean, you got to be doing face pulls. You got to be doing retractions. You got to be doing pull-ups. All those things are key to the bench, and people don't even realize it. Okay, mm-hmm. So you got to squat and you got to deadlift. Squats. I mean, we could talk about squats all day. I actually am coming out with a new DVD. It provides 12 lessons on all the key muscle building exercises that everyone gets wrong. It's like 15, 20 minutes on each one. How to perform the squat, how to perform the bench press, how to perform the power clean, how to perform military press, how to do RDLs. All these key exercises are like the mass builders, the strength builders, the compound movements that everyone messes up. Okay, so I was like, I'm going to do each one as a lesson, put it on a DVD, and there's also a nutrition piece in there, a 20-minute nutrition lesson on there from Men's Fitness. He's a nutritional expert down in New Jersey, John Alvino. He did it, and he filmed the whole thing, and he teaches you how to determine your own caloric needs, you know, individualize how to do it, how the nutritionists do it. I mean, it's right there on the DVD. So it's such a big issue, even with strength coaches. I mean, if you talk about athletes not knowing how to squat, who do I blame? I blame the strength coach, okay? You see all these strength coaches on YouTube talking about, well, my athlete, you know, squats 500. Okay, and they put up this video. It's the worst freaking form. They're doing such a disservice to these athletes, and you need to make sure, okay, as a strength coach, these guys are healthy, okay, and you don't injure them. And I don't care, you know, I don't care how old the athlete is. If he's a high school professional, I mean, you got to make sure. It's your job not to get them injured. I don't care if ego plays a role. Now, I have athletes that I train, they always want to add weight to the bar, okay? And I'm not going to let them because, one, their parents would kill me if they get injured, okay? But, two, I have a responsibility. If I see that they can't handle, like, 405 on the deadlift, I'm not going to allow them to try to – I mean, they hit 405, but the form broke down. I'm going to regress them back to a lighter weight and have them hit more volume because they need to work on their form. And they can do accessory exercises to build up the muscles responsible for that deadlift, okay? So they need to perform technique work, and they also need to get stronger before they can progress. So I have to keep them in check. That's my job.
Definitely. Here's another good one for you. What exercise do you find the best for explosive power and speed for your athletes?
Are we talking vertical speed? Are we talking horizontal speed? Are we talking agility? I mean,
I assume he didn't really go specific, but I assume he means, like, overall explosive strength. What is your favorite exercise to develop that?
I love sprinting. I mean, if you're talking overall strength, I mean, if you're talking horizontal propulsion, we're talking sprinting. If you're talking vertical, we're talking power cleans. I mean, we could go off all day on both those things, but the key is how fast – now, after neurologically we excite those motor units – how fast, how explosive, how quickly we can create movement, okay? So there's a delay there. We activate the motor units, and then how fast movement occurs, okay? That's explosive power. So that's the difference between starting strength and explosive power. But we want to make sure we incorporate exercises that activate lots of motor units, okay? And that's where the speed comes in. Sprinting activates motor units. Power cleans activates motor units. Now, power cleans, we need to make sure that if the athlete does not have the shoulder flexibility to rack the weight, we regress back to power shrugs, okay? So that's a key thing for any athlete out there or any lifter. Okay, well, they see an Olympic weightlifting clip on YouTube. Now, don't go in the gym and start loading up and doing power cleans and racking it because you're going to stress the hell out of your shoulders. And racking it means where they extend up and they rack it on their shoulders with their elbows up and their hands on the bar, okay? So power shrugs are a way to get that explosiveness without the shoulder stress, okay? And that's basically a power shrug is we perform the power clean, but instead of racking it, we just high pull it. Okay, high pull it to a position underneath the throat. Okay, so, and we do that from a hang. Now, a hang means I don't pull it off the floor. I do it from starting position, mid-shin, where my hips are back, basically in the bottom position of an RDL or a Keystone deadlift, and we extend up and we go into a power shrug. And the key is explosiveness. Okay, just because... And the other thing we can talk about is Olympic weightlifting. People say, well, if they do Olympic weightlifting, that's explosive. No. If Olympic weightlifting is done proficiently, then it's explosive. But if you get athletes in there and the weight is moving so slow, that's not explosive power. You're not developing and activating motor units. It has to be done explosively and efficiently. Okay, that's when the power occurs. Okay, just because I'm doing power cleans or power shrugs or anything like that, it doesn't mean I'm developing that explosive power. So that's another key point that you want to realize.
Awesome. Well,
The other thing, I want to go off on one more tangent here.
Sprinting.
Okay, sprinting. A lot of people do, sprinting in agility ladders. They talk about agility. These speed ladders aren't developing agility. Where's the leg drive? Okay, when you're performing agility drills around a cone and stuff, there's explosive loading of the kinetic chain, okay? And with speed ladders, you're not developing any speed because there's no leg drive, okay? So I'm going to give away a secret. In my Chaos Training Manual, what I do is I'm going to use a speed ladder, but I'm going to use it on the side of a hill. And we're talking about 10 to 15 degree incline, okay? Now, what does this do? It allows us to improve our footwork, but it also introduces leg drive into the scenario. And that's the key to explosive power. That's the key to agility. Now, we need to be proficient. As we explosively load the kinetic chain, does it break down? Where does it break down? Is it the core? Is it the knees? Is it the hips, ankles? Where does it break down? So one thing that you can do to improve agility, improve speed, is put that that speed ladder on the side of the hill. And we've done it, and it works amazing. And make sure that you hit both directions, okay? Go with your left leg angled down the hill, and then go back the other way with your right leg angled down the hill. And you want to make sure that the angle of the hill, like I said, is about 10 to 15 degrees. That's a little key tip that I can throw out there. One of the innovative ways we've used a conventional speed ladder to improve the benefits. Okay, we never do it on a flat surface. I mean, we don't see the benefits there. We want to increase the leg drive, increase the motor units, and increase the demand for stability across the whole kinetic chain. So that's just another thing I can throw out there.
Awesome. Getting towards the end here, tell us a little bit about, like, I know you went over a little bit, but tell us some stuff maybe that, you know, people might want to know about what's included with AMD and what exactly they get with your program.
Okay, excellent. Well, AMD is a product I came out with because everything up across my career has been for athletes. And I got I got emails every day from just regular people. All these questions you asked me today, I get them every day. You know, how to increase muscle. I feel like crap. My lower back hurts. I have a shoulder injury. How do I lift? And it's so important, okay, to me to have these people just get better. It just kills me that there's people out there that are injured, they can't lift, and there's not really good information out there. I mean, if you go to the good sites like Cosgrove and Cressy and Robertson, all these guys, you're going to get good information. But there's a ton of bad information out there as well. So I wanted to give them a product, a muscle-building product. Hey, this is something you could take to the gym with you and just start feeling better right now. And that was the whole reason I created AMD. The other thing that I wanted to provide is a template. People like templates. They don't want guesswork. They want to get in, have their printable workout, and they want step-by-step what to do. So here's what I did for AMD. I said, I'm creating a template where they can put any program they're on, 531, Westside, Dog Crap, any workout they're on, and plug it into this template. Okay, and what is in the template? It tells you what to do from the time you step into the gym until the time you leave. It's not just the workout. It's mobility. It's activation, how to wake up those muscles that are really sleeping, they're inhibited. It's foam rolling, how to, you know, improve the extensibility of your muscles, how to release tension across you know, your quads and your back and all that stuff. It's how to do rehab. It's all that stuff, okay, including the workout. Okay, so with the AMD system, they get a whole rehab manual. That's the ACS. They get a core training manual. That's Combat Core. Combat Core, I've sold thousands of copies of Combat Core to people across the world. And I said, well, it's such a good core training workout. I'm just going to plug it into the AMD system. And that's exactly what I did. I give Combat Core with AMD. Also with AMD, I said, well, here's the primary workout. What do I do for the people that want to lose fat? Okay, so I provide an accelerated fat loss manual that plugs into the template. It all plugs into the template. It's so easy. Okay, and the accelerated fat loss, it gives you all these options. If you like hitting the treadmill, you got intervals. If you like hitting sled dragon, it has that. If you like dumbbells, I mean, it gives you all these options to add a fat loss session into your program. Okay, so it's just a complete system, and that's exactly what I wanted to do. I wanted people to reach their goals, but I wanted them to do it the right way, and I want to teach them how to make their own muscle-building workouts. Okay, after they're done, I give 16 weeks of workouts. You know, here's all the stuff, start to finish, follow this, and you're going to make goals, or you're going to make gains, and you're going to reach your goals. But what do you do afterwards? Easy. You know how to make a program now. I teach you. Okay, so that's a little. That's AMD in a nutshell. I think it's really great, and that's you know, I think it's really important too.
What I know you've sold quite a few of these since you launched it a little while back. What are some success stories and stuff that you've gotten back, and you know, results you've heard? I know you probably get tons and tons of email. I know I've started to get quite a few myself, but
it's ridiculous.
You know,
yeah, I mean,
any of them stand out in your mind as like, wow, I can't believe my program did that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I got an email the other day. This guy said, I've been to doctors, I've been to therapists, I've been to chiropractors. My back, I haven't been able to lift in many years. And he said AMD and the ACS manual, ACS is the Accelerated Corrected Strategies that plugs into the AMD template. Has fixed it. He's lifting again. He's making changes in his life, and he's just feeling great. And I mean, I all these people that email me, I write them back. I'm like, you just made my day, because that's exactly why I built this whole system, and it makes me feel great. I love it. I get those emails every day. I mean, women losing weight, athletes getting stronger. It's just great.
That's awesome. I know I've started to get quite a few of them for doing all these interviews, and it definitely, we love feedback, so it's always a good thing to hear when you help.
I love it. Yeah, it's definitely something that keeps me going. I mean, you know how hard it is to maintain a site and all that stuff. I'm up till 1 a.m. just putting out blog posts and videos, and I mean, I do it because, you know, people really benefit from it, and they love it, and they send me these emails, and it just keeps me going. I love it.
Definitely. Well, go ahead and drop your sites. I know, is it Accelerated Muscle Development or Accelerated Muscular Development is AMD site, so people can go there and check that out. Or there's actually a link on the bot. If you're watching on the webcast, there's a link that takes you there.
Yeah, and I would say go there, check it out. I really think it's an important system. Also, I got tons of bonuses with it, and you can see that as well. But go to Diesel Crew. And sign up for the newsletter. There's tons and tons of blog posts and videos, muscle building videos, and really cool like training stuff we do in the gym. So go there, check it out, sign up for the newsletter, and I really, really appreciate you letting me talk to you today.
Definitely. And what's your YouTube channel too? So they have
yep.
that. There's all kinds of stuff on there.
Oh man, I just became a partner on YouTube, and I got about 120 videos on there. It's YouTube.com/SmittyDiesel, or you could put in /TheDieselCrew.
Nice. All right. Well, once again, I want to thank Smitty. Thank you again for coming on and talking to all the people and talking to all my readers and listeners, and you know, just a big thank you all together. And that's about it, man.
Well, I appreciate it, Ryan. Thank you very much.
All right, Smitty. If you want to stay on the line for a quick second, don't hang up yet. But thanks a lot, guys, for coming in. Once again, this is Ryan McGinn with Muscle Gaining Experts, and we interviewed Jim Smitty-Smith from the Diesel Crew. And thanks a lot, man. And I'll see you, see all you guys later.